Welcome to Money Talk with MFLN Personal Finance. This podcast series offers brief recaps of our recent online professional development webinars targeted at personal finance managers and extension educators who work with military service members. I'm Molly Herndon, Program Coordinator for the Personal Finance Team, and I'm joined by Money Talk herself, Dr. Barbara O'Neill. Dr. O'Neill is a distinguished professor in the School of Environmental and Biological Sciences at Rutgers University and is the Rutgers Cooperative Extension Specialist in Financial Resource Management. Today, Dr. O'Neill and I are going to be discussing the January 15th webinar, Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, which was hosted by Andrew Zumwalt. You can watch the recording and find out more information about this session at militaryfamilieslearningnetwork.org/event/22039. Okay, Dr. O'Neill, what are some of the biggest changes to income tax filing as a result of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act?
Well, there were lots of changes that we talked about on the webinar. Probably the biggest one is that the standard deduction for single and married couples filing jointly has almost doubled. And so the best estimates now are that only about 10% of taxpayers will benefit from itemizing their deductions because the standard deduction will be higher for them since it's increased so much. Also, we have lower tax rates, so lower than they were in 2017, and this will continue through 2025. So, for example, the old 15% tax rate is now 12%. No more personal exemptions, which of course decrease the amount of income on which taxes were paid. So exemptions have gone away for 8 years. And casualty loss deductions are limited to a natural disaster declared by the President of the United States. So, for example, if somebody's house burns down, you're kind of out of luck. It's not a natural disaster, but if somebody is part of a tornado or a flood or hurricane, something like that, and it qualifies as a declared national disaster, then they would be able to deduct their unreimbursed losses on their tax return. Another thing that was discussed was the new qualified business income deduction. So this is a 20% deduction for people who have what they call pass-through income, which comes from either an LLC, a sole proprietorship, or a partnership. And this was done basically to give some parity to small business owners in consideration of the tax cuts that were given to large corporations. There's a $10,000 cap on the so-called SALT deductions, and SALT is an acronym for state and local taxes. And so people who, for example, in my neck of the woods in New Jersey, it's not uncommon for some people to pay $20,000, $25,000 of property taxes in some of our larger urban areas. So they're only going to be able to write off $10,000, which of course will also have the effect of reducing the number of people who can itemize. And then also another thing that kind of affects our service members is that moving expenses are no longer deductible. But there was an exemption that was put in for service members who are on a PCS or a permanent change of station. So they will be able to deduct their expenses relating to the moving and the storage of their possessions during a PCS move. So those are some of the biggest highlights.
Okay. Are there any other tax law changes that affect people based on their health and relationship status?
Oh, yeah. They packed a lot of stuff into this tax law. In fact, they said that this is the largest mass change in the U.S. tax code in 30 years. So you'd have to go back to the 1980s to have a tax law that affected so many different moving parts of people's income tax. So yeah, let's look at health and relationship status. So the child tax credit is now $2,000. It had been $1,000. And $1,400 is refundable, which means that you can get money back even if you have no tax liability. There's also a $500 non-refundable credit for other dependents. So, for example, you might have an 18-year-old child who is aged out of being qualified for the child tax credit, but they're a dependent, or you might have a dependent parent. And this is partially to make up for the loss of the exemptions for people who would have been claimed previously under the older tax law. Also, for people getting divorced, for all divorce decrees that were executed as of January 1st of this year, alimony is no longer deductible by the person who pays it, and it's no longer taxable to the recipient spouse. So it just doesn't factor into people's tax situation anymore as far as divorce goes. Every tax filer who gets a standard deduction now, because we have the standard deduction, we don't have the exemptions, there's going to be fewer issues with people who are double claiming. You know, it was not uncommon for both parents to want to claim the children, and then there was a, you know, like a double claiming of the same kids. Those kind of issues are avoided. And then starting in 2019, this year, but it doesn't affect your taxes from last year that we're kind of working on now, there is no longer a penalty due if individuals don't have health insurance. So if you didn't have health insurance last year, you will still have to pay a penalty on your 2018 return, but the penalty goes away in 2019.
Okay. There is a new income tax form for 2018. What does the new 1040 form for the IRS look like?
Well, if you can remember back in the last presidential campaign, there was talk of having a tax return look like a postcard, that you could literally file it on a postcard. So it came pretty close. It's kind of like the size of a large postcard. But again, keep in mind that most people don't do paper returns, whether it's on paper or on a postcard. Most people are filing electronically. But if you are to file, if you decide to file on paper, it's going to be the size of a half of an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. And there's a side, front side and a back side. However, if you have a complex situation with your finances, there are also 6 new forms, they call them schedules 1 to 6, that are in addition to the previous schedules that we had A, B, C, D, E, F, and S, E. So you've got lettered schedules, we now have numbered schedules. So in reality, what's happening is that people who have very simple tax returns, this new 1040 form will be easy to complete. And everybody will have to fill out the new 1040 form, because the 1040 EZ and the 1040 A that we had previously for people with similar tax, with people who had simpler tax filings, those have gone away. So everybody has to use the 1040. Okay. So if you have a simple tax life, it probably would be pretty easy. But if you have more complex finances, it's probably not going to feel any different than before, because a lot of the lines that they took off the 1040 form to make it fit a half a page versus a full page have just ended up on these schedules 1 to 6. Okay. So it's not really making people's tax filing any simpler. It's just a different format and a different way that the computations are made. So the front page of this new 1040 form has all the written information. So that's where people are going to put their name, their address, their social security number, the number of dependents, their filing status, all that written information. And then the back page is where you have all the numbers. So that's where people are going to have their income, their deductions, their taxes, their tax credits. But again, a lot of the information that's going to be fed to the back of that form is going to be also on those new schedules 1 to 6 that I mentioned before. And then there's also a new worksheet to calculate the new 20% deduction for qualified business income from those pass-through entities that I mentioned before. Taxpayers don't actually file this new form. It's more like a worksheet, but they have to keep it with their tax records in the event of an audit. Mm-hmm. And then, interestingly enough, with the new forms, they kind of resemble the old form, but interesting, they have several lines that say reserved on them. And I guess Congress always had the prerogative to perhaps pass some clarifying legislation, and the IRS just wanted to kind of hedge their bets and have lines available if needed. So when you see those, it looks kind of strange because you're kind of saying reserve for what? You don't have to worry about that. It's just that they had to print the forms by a certain date and they wanted to leave themselves the option of having some extra spaces. So that's in there as well.
Okay. Was there any other helpful information that was shared on the webinar?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of different information. First of all, the due date is actually April 15th, because some years it kind of floats around. If April 15th is on a weekend, they give you a few more days, or if there's certain holidays. People who live in Maine or Massachusetts, they have a deadline of April 17th, and that has to do with some holiday that they have. People who can't get it done by April 15th or 17th, if in those two states, can automatically extend their filing of their return to October 15th. So they have to file a form 4868 and send it to the IRS by April 15th. But again, you're just extending the time to prepare the return. You're not extending the time to make payment. So you kind of have to do a best guess estimate anyway, because if you're going to be under withheld or owe tax, you've got to pay that up in April. And in fact, there have been some news reports just this week that some of the early tax filings, people are grumbling online on social media that they're not getting the refunds that they expected. All tax forms and schedules are available for downloading. So if people do want to file a paper return, they would go to irs.gov. It was also noted that gambling expenses are still deductible. So if you're lucky enough to win something and you want to have some offsetting expenses, you can still deduct those. However, unreimbursed employee business expenses are not. So if you don't get fully reimbursed for your mileage or travel expenses or anything like that from an employer, you can't take those off on your tax return either. So you're kind of paying them out of pocket, so to speak. Also, it was emphasized on the webinar that different increments of income are taxed at different rates. So even though you might be, let's say, in the 10% rate or let's say 22% or something like that, you don't pay tax on all of your income at that highest rate. It's just the last dollar of income. And then there's different ranges of income that fall into the different tax rates. And there are seven tax rates from 2018 through 2025, and they range from 10 to 37%. And then the other thing that was mentioned is that tax law, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, has what they call a sunset clause in it that was needed to put in there in order to meet certain budget deficit calculation things that Congress has. And if Congress does nothing to amend or extend the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, or, you know, just pass a new law, I guess, then tax rules will go back to the way that they were in 2017. And then we get back to all the old rules and the old tax brackets, and everything else goes back to the way it was before.
Okay. What military-specific tax information is important for financial educators and counselors to know?
Okay, well, Andrew Zumwalt mentioned the IRS Publication 3, which is called Armed Forces Tax Guide, as being a really good source of information for military families. He also noted that service members who are serving in a combat zone receive an extended time to file their income taxes, and that time is calculated by the time left in the tax filing season plus 180 days, and the clock starts ticking on that 180 days on the last day that people serve in that hazardous duty area. And then, as I mentioned before, moving expenses related to a permanent change of station move are still deductible for military families. And that applies in three situations. It applies from your home to your first post. So if you're just entering the military, basically, between your PCS posts, which could be your entire military career going from one place to another, and then your last post back to your home, whatever, wherever that would be, when you end your military career. So there's three different times when people can have those expenses itemized as a deduction if they're in the military. Also, he mentioned that certain reservist expenses are deductible, such as travel more than 100 miles one way to drills and reserve meetings that people are required to attend. And then the last thing that he mentioned is something that's pretty sobering, obviously, because it involves the death of a service member, but it was pointed out that there's such a thing as the HEART Act, H-E-A-R-T, and CAP. So I'm assuming that's an acronym for something. And what was mentioned is that when a service member passes away, there is a $100,000 death gratuity. And also, if they have the maximum life insurance benefit of $400,000, so if you add those two together, that's $500,000, half $1 million, and that can roll straight to a Roth IRA, and then no tax is due on the $500,000, and then the earnings grow tax-free, and the qualified withdrawals are tax-free. So, you know, that's a great financial benefit, obviously. It's a very bittersweet one because it comes with the death of a service member, but it is a way to extend those resources because Roth IRAs have all sorts of potential for stretching between generations. People can take advantage of that benefit.
Okay. The HEART Act stands for Heroes Earnings Assistance and Relief Tax Act.
Okay. I'm sure it was an acronym for something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Well, great information. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening today. You can find this recording and archived episodes of the Money Talk podcast, as well as an upcoming calendar of professional development events, blog posts targeted at military service providers, and more on our website at militaryfamilieslearningnetwork.org.